Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
First blood terror in New Orleans. That's how former and retired CIA operations officer Sam Faddis describes the new year terror attacks in New Orleans, and also what looks like potential terror attack in Las Vegas, Nevada as well. Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We have Jeremy Carl, a senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, kicking off the 9 o'clock hour for us here this morning. Jeremy, thanks for being with us here. Obviously, you know, I think this comes as maybe a shock to people, but not a surprise to people here once again, because, I mean, even Biden's own FBI director just told us a few months ago that he sees blinking lights everywhere because of all the national security threats facing this country, because of these, you know, really these failed decisions and policies in the last 4 years.
Yeah, well, I think the bigger problem, Aaron, is that it's not even that they're failed. They were success by the Democrat standards. It's like they didn't care about the safety of, I mean, I hate to be simple, it sounds like almost incredible to say it, but I mean, I'm really saying this. It's not just me trying to be political or something. They cared less about the safety of the American people than about flooding America with as many people as they could who they thought would be future Democrat voters. And when you do that, of course, it's not saying that everybody who floods in is necessarily, I thought, of course, most aren't, but you're going to get a lot of really bad apples. And now Trump has to go in and pick up the pieces of this Democrat disaster.
That's right. It's not only that they flooded this country with all sorts of illegal aliens, people were crossing the border that are on the terror watch list, but they also flooded this country with anti-American propaganda, this critical race theory garbage and everything. So whether they imported this type of radical Islamic nonsense or whether they allowed it to fester on American soil, they allowed it through open borders and they allowed it through the anti-American propaganda.
Yeah, absolutely. And you pointed out, you made a reference earlier to Stephen Miller, who's kind of one of Trump's top aides, tweet about this the other day. He said, look, this isn't homegrown, because without all of the illegals and without all of the border being wide open, you wouldn't have the kind of huge number of Muslims in America from whom, and of course, this is, I mean, I hate to always have to give these disclaimers, but of course, I'm not talking about the vast majority of folks who, have, just like any religion, are going to be peaceable, but you're going to have a disproportionate problem, we find out historically, not just in the U.S., but in other countries with folks with Muslim backgrounds. And so, you know, that would actually arguably demand a little bit more scrutiny. But in fact, what the Biden administration has done is to decide, hey, we're going to have zero scrutiny and just let everybody in illegally. And then you add that to the propaganda that you touched on. And that's why we are where we are.
Yeah, Stephen Miller said this, according to Eric Doherty via X. This is an incoming Trump deputy chief of staff at the White House. Islamist terrorism is an import. It is not homegrown. It did not exist here before migration brought it here. Senator John Barrasso out of Wyoming with a spot-on response here as well. We'll start there right after this with Jeremy Carl.
At Renewal. Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, a quick few minutes here with Jeremy Carl, senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, lives in Bozeman, Montana. So Wyoming Senator John Barrasso said this following the news of this terror attack in New Orleans. the United States Senate must confirm President Trump's national security team as soon as possible. Lives depend on it. And then, Jeremy, I thought Sean Davis really summed it up well. The FBI facing more scrutiny now as well after the apparent radicalism of this Islamic terrorist in New Orleans was apparently already out there on social media and elsewhere. But Sean Davis said this: the FBI was too busy kneeling at BLM riots, arresting Christian pastors, locking up patriotic grandmothers, spying on churches, and lying about school board parents to be bothered with something as trivial as stopping violent terrorists from killing Americans. Jeremy, I know you've written a lot about how this woke nonsense is. This woke agenda has put a priority on bashing everyday Americans and downplaying, you know, actual threats out there.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, it's the problem. It's not just that people like me are whining, oh, it's woke, you know, it's terrible. It's that when we have our attention on these non-problems, or sometimes anti-problems, they're not even problems at all, we take our attention away from real problems. And we see this again in this attack down in Louisiana, where it was clearly this guy was a known wolf, not a lone wolf. It may have been a lone wolf, but he was certainly very well known to our FBI, but they're more interested in investigating Christian pastors, or they're more interested in, you know, somebody who might have been within 200 feet of the Capitol on January 6th, and if there's some grandma. And it's just, it's nuts. And obviously we hope that, and I'm confident that President Trump is going to turn that around when he is in office, but we need to clean house personnel-wise as well, because personnel is policy, and we're not going to be able to change the policy when we've still got some of the same bad apples who made the original policy in government.
That's right. It's not just the people at the top. It's the bureaucracy. We are just being crippled by bureaucracy. Elon Musk had a great tweet over the holiday break that I saw where he said, we don't live in a democracy, we live in a bureaucracy, where unelected bureaucrats are the ones basically calling the shots right now. And so that's why we need to see some reforms on that front. Let me see here. I know, you know, we're still going to get more details and more facts. We don't have all the facts on the Las Vegas case where the Tesla Cybertruck apparently blew up in front of the Trump Hotel. Obviously, it seems like a political statement, a terroristic statement, given, you know, the fact that it was a Tesla vehicle. But we just heard a report on the National News Update that apparently this was an active duty soldier, which is just outrageous. But, you know, my first reaction was kind of to your point here, which is, well, they treated, you know, if you were a soldier that didn't want to get stuck with the experimental COVID shot, you were the threat to America. But apparently, you know, they'll look at who they've allowed to stay in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm sure that as we get more information, we're going to find out that this didn't come out of nowhere, that there were going to be signs. And it's scary. I mean, obviously, I mean, terror is an incredibly effective political tool, as well as being obviously, you know, horrifically damaging and losing lives, because it takes people who are doing nothing more than, hey, they're out on Bourbon Street, or they're out at a hotel in Vegas, or they're, you know, in Times Square, or wherever they are, even they're walking through downtown Missoula or something, right? It just, it makes everybody a target. And so it's something that we have to have zero tolerance for, and we need to be looking in the right places and not worrying about, you know, whether some soldier is getting a COVID shot.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also, you know, stay vigilant. I think everybody's, you know, got to keep their head on a swivel. I mean, luckily we live here in Montana, but then again, that didn't help us, you know, with the illegal alien invasion. And I mean, some of my top stories of 2024, I went and pulled up the top 10 list based on Montana views, page views, and, you know, stabbing incident in the Flathead Valley connected to an illegal alien, all sorts of stories. Trinidad Aragua now has a presence in Montana, and they were just attacking border stations on our southern border. We got to keep our head on a swivel, but we also have to continue to have the ability to protect ourselves and to be able to respond as the immediate responders. And that's partly why we're going to be talking with Gary Marbot with the Montana Shooting Sports Association about self-defense. It's so important. About a couple of minutes here before our next break here, Jeremy, Carl, how is the Trump transition going? I know there was more news over the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, they're continuing to fill spaces. I mean, they're in a good space, I think. We're going to certainly be far, far more prepared than we were when we walked in 2017. I was talking just the other day with kind of a really leading guy, a billionaire, I mean, somebody who really has a lot of visibility on kind of how things are going, and he says he's never seen such a good group of personnel coming into an administration. So I think we're bringing in good folks. It's going to take a little longer than what we might like in some cases. But as you pointed out from that tweet earlier, the biggest thing we need to do is just put pressure on the Senate to confirm these nominees, right? Because no matter how good they are, if we can't get them confirmed, then they can't go do their jobs. So President Trump was elected with a mandate, and we need the Senate to confirm that mandate. I know we're not going to have problems with that with our senators here in Montana, but some of the other folks may not be as good.
Yeah, some of the squishier Republicans, and then certainly some of the most of the Democrats that will just knee-jerk vote against any Trump nominee. Yeah, that's why I was glad last time we caught up with, you know, Senator-elect Tim Sheehy, who would be sworn in tomorrow, January 3rd, is that they plan on holding hearings even before January 20th when President Trump is sworn in. All right, Jeremy Carl, senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, thanks for your time. As always, Gary Marbit coming up right after this.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, I got a great update here from Gary Marbit with the Montana Shooting Sports Association. Hey, mark your calendars. If you can make it to Helena for MSSA's 2025 legislative reception 1 week from today, Thursday, January 9th, at Jorgensen's Inn, now the Best Western in Helena, Thursday, January 9th. Yeah, put that on your calendars. He's going to be doing the legislative update, and he says that that is key to so many of their successes over the years in getting so many of these gun rights and pro-gun legislation through the Montana legislature. Gary Marbit with the Montana Shooting Sports Association now joining us here once again on Montana Talks. Gary, Happy New Year, and thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good morning to you, and good morning to all your listeners across Montana.
Well, obviously, I know people really, you know, if they can make it to your legislative reception, that'll be a great opportunity not only to get the full briefing from you, but also an opportunity for them to talk to their lawmakers about this pro-gun legislation. You're now up to, what, 71 pieces of legislation that you've successfully gotten through the legislature. That's incredible.
That's correct. We're the most successful such state-level entity in the U.S., which probably means in the world. That's why Montana has arguably the best gun laws in America and arguably in the world, is because of the work that the Montana Shooting Sports Association has done over 30 to 40 years. So we do approach the legislature every session. We get pro-gun bills through the legislature, and we don't allow the anti-gun bills to go through. And that starts with our legislative reception at the beginning of the session. For interested gun owners who want to attend and support us, we have a briefing session at Jorgensen starting at 3 o'clock, from 3 to 5. And what we want to do is to brief our friends on our legislative agenda so they are thoroughly knowledgeable about it and then can speak intelligently about our legislative agenda to legislators who attend the reception at 6 o'clock.
You've been so successful. What is still left to accomplish is probably the easiest question to ask you.
Well, we have picked a lot of low-hanging fruit, but we continue to address problems that tend to crop up in Montana, which leads me to run through our legislative agenda for the upcoming session. We will have four measures before the legislature this session. The first one is a joint resolution of the legislature requesting that the Board of Regents direct the university system to begin incorporating shooting sports into the various campuses. So we know that Montana produces a number of nationally and internationally champion shooters disproportionate to our population. the when those young shooters want to go to college, they have to leave Montana to go to states that have collegiate shooting programs and scholarships for those programs. So we'd like to keep those kids in Montana. So we are urging the university system to get up to speed with shooting sports. And there are lots of different shooting sports. There's trap and skeet and small bore and bullseye and practical pistol and long-range precision rifle. And there's a big menu of shooting sports to pick from, including the Olympic shooting sports. But we'd like to get our university systems up to speed on those. The next measure we will be pressing is a non-discrimination measure. We're seeing some problems with discrimination about firearms cropping up in insurance and in finance in Montana. And the Montana Constitution prohibits discrimination based on political views and stuff like that. And so we want to be clear that people who are exercising the right to keep and bear arms don't get snared up in any discrimination by the insurance industry or the finance industry. So we're seeing, for example, small businesses being told by their insurance carrier that if you don't ban guns at your business, we're going to drop your insurance. Well, that is very discriminatory. So we want to prevent that. Another measure has to do with the cost of self-defense. And what I have seen across Montana is now and then there are flaky prosecutions that pop up that should never be brought for somebody who was legitimately defending themselves, yet the prosecutor decides they can still punish the person by dragging them through the knothole of a prosecution, and the person, you know, has to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a defense, maybe lose their home and their job over a prosecution that should never have occurred. So this bill says that if a person is charged with a crime and they plead self-defense and they are not convicted, then their defense costs get paid. And we think that's only fair. The last measure has to do with disarmament in the pretrial phase of criminal procedures. If you are arrested for jaywalking and you have to go to court, it's very common, well, it's almost universal for prosecutors to hand the judge a list of restrictions they want the judge to impose with a court order, and that always includes no guns, no possession of any firearms. Well, the problem with that is it gets entered in the computers, and it goes into the federal system, and the feds make the determination that the person is a prohibited person and cannot possess firearms. And so then if the prosecution is dropped or the person is acquitted or whatever, it takes years and tens of thousands of dollars in lawyers' fees to get that federal disability removed from the person's record. So our bill will say that unless a person is accused of a violent felony crime or uses a weapon in a crime of violence, a judge may not prohibit their possession of firearms pending trial. So those are the four items that we will have up on our legislative agenda, and they all address problems in Montana that we'd like to either head off or cure.
Yeah, fascinating. All four of those are very fascinating topics. I mean, I think one about the non-discrimination when it comes to insurance or even just banking in general. I know, you know, the Montana banks are good about this, but the big major banks, I mean, they not only now want to target gun owners or people that have a gun business, but now they want to broaden it out to, you know, they don't like your religious beliefs. They don't like your view on the, you know, transgender debate. They will try to debank you or not, or try to insure you. And so I say that because it's interesting how what you're leading the charge on is also, you know, leading the fight that's important for others, like religious liberties and other, you know, freedoms in business as well when it comes to debanking or insurance issues.
You bet. And debanking is a national phenomenon that's beginning to raise its ugly head. And there are people in businesses that the banks philosophically don't agree with, and the person or the business gets a notice one day that their bank account has been closed, their credit card's canceled, and the only way they can do business is cash for the foreseeable future. And so the attempt is to shut the entity or the business down and deny their ability to be in business and their First Amendment rights as well, simply by undercutting them with this debanking. So we think, at least in terms of our area of interest, that is in the firearms and firearms-related businesses, we need to declare in Montana that that is discrimination that is prohibited under the Montana Constitution.
Well, and then another topic that you brought up, I mean, talk about common sense, shooting sports on our college campuses. That would be, it seems like to me, it would be with the explosion of club sports, you know, aside from just, you know, the big football, basketball, you know, teams, there's a bunch of club sports that are now taking place. And so to me, this would be a huge draw, a huge recruitment thing for our college campuses, because why would kids want to come to Montana or stay in Montana to go to college? Well, they like the outdoors. They like to ski. They like to hunt. They like to shoot. So that would seem to me that it just makes common sense for these university campuses.
Right, I think so. And, of course, the universities, being bastions of liberal thought in Montana, will object to this. What they will say in the committee hearings is, we simply can't afford this. If the legislature wants to appropriate another $100 million for us to develop shooting ranges, well, maybe. My response is, you know, the infrastructure is already there for it. There are shooting ranges in every community in Montana, and I will have letters from major shooting ranges saying they'd be glad to cooperate with the universities and partner in getting shooting sports up and running at the universities to undercut that argument that the universities simply can't afford it.
Well, and then you also brought up the cost of self-defense. And when I heard you talk about that, the one word that came to mind was lawfare. This is the type of, you know, lawfare was kind of the word of 2024, where the lawfare being used to go after, you know, President Trump with these phony court cases and phony indictments, et cetera, that they're using this lawfare to go after gun owners. Oh, yeah, you've got the right to defend yourself, but then we're going to try to bankrupt you in the process through this lawfare, basically.
Now, in my experience, some of the flaky prosecutions that have been brought in Montana have been done by prosecutors who are anti-gun. But there are other prosecutions brought by prosecutors who are just can't make up their minds. And their attitude is, well, let the jury sort it out. Without any thought to how dire that's going to be for the accused person. You know, the prosecutor has a budget of public money, taxpayer money they can spend, and so no big deal to them. But when the accused has to sell his house and loses his job over the stress of the prosecution, the cost of that is a lot.
Well, Gary Marbit, it sounds like it's going to be one heck of a briefing session at the Montana Shooting Sports Association Legislative Banquet coming up 1 week from today, Thursday, January 9th. So, folks, we got the cliff notes today. We hit the high points, but you'll get the full briefing 1 week from today. Gary Marbit, president of the Montana Shooting Sports Association, thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Also, we're always looking for members, and so we have a website at mtssa.org, and there's membership information there.
Do people need to RSVP for your reception, or can they just show up for it?
No, they can show up. We do, again, want them to show up for that briefing session from 3 to 5, so that they will be prepared to discuss our issues with legislators at the reception. And by the way, we will have hors d'oeuvres there, but it won't be any kind of sit-down banquet.
All right. Well, Gary Marbit, thanks for all you do and all you've done and you're continuing to do on behalf of the people of Montana. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for your time. Cameron Moylan from the Butte Historical Society. This is very interesting. We'll chat with him right after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
The United States has a significant opportunity to boost energy independence and support agriculture by refining renewable fuels and jet fuels from animal tallow and oil seeds. Recently, I spoke with former chief agricultural negotiator in the Trump administration, Ambassador Greg Dowd. He emphasized that this approach can create new markets for farmers and ranchers while sustaining demand for meat production and ag products.
Well, it has an enormous impact if you can have a demand for tallow beyond just making fast food hamburgers. And that's what you've seen, actually, is some of that beef tallow, and tallow makes fantastic fighter jet fuel. The U.S. military loves it.
Renewable fuel production creates new revenue opportunities for farmers and ranchers by supporting crop growth and livestock processing closer to home. Dowd said that supplying feedstocks like oil seeds and animal tallow to refineries like Montana Renewables in Great Falls, Montana, who only produces renewable jet fuel from crop and animal products, can boost local economies and strengthen agriculture's role in sustainable energy creation, while at the same time, raising and finishing more cattle in rural states creates more profitability margin for cow-calf producers and more options for farmers to market their crops. Dowd says the U.S. is well-positioned to be a leader in energy independence and protein production. I'm Lee Northland.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, so back in mid-December, I was talking about a news story on the radio here, and I think it was a Freedom Foundation report. And I put a headline on our Montana Talks website, Dolly Parton versus the Montana Teachers Union. I don't know if you guys remember me talking about this, but we featured a couple of different reports by the Freedom Foundation. First, the Freedom Foundation, Max Nelson with the Freedom Foundation, did a big report, kind of an expose on a teachers union conference in Bozeman, Montana, back in October, where they were pushing this radical anti-American critical race theory, this LGBTQ propaganda, all of these different radical sessions, right? So they were pushing this woke agenda at this teachers union conference. So we mentioned that story, I think, back in November. And then in December, I had Max Nelson from the Freedom Foundation back with us, and we were talking about how, you know, here you've got the Montana Teachers Union basically promoting these books that are these radical, woke, left-wing books. And you contrast that with Dolly Parton's Imagination Library program, and it's like, wow, what a contrast. You know, kids all across Montana, through the Dolly Parton program, their kids all across Montana are getting wholesome books shipped to them thanks to a program supported by country music legend Dolly Parton and Montana First Lady Susan Gianforte. So they get wholesome books from Dolly Parton and Susan Gianforte, but then you got the Montana Teachers Union or the Montana Federation of Public Employees pushing crazy, woke, left-wing propaganda on kids. So I was talking about that on the radio, and then I get this great message from one of our listeners in Butte, Montana. And anyway, we'll talk about that here in just a second. But first, Cameron Moylan is the vice president for the Butte Historical Society. Hey, Cameron, great to have you back on the show. Thanks for being with us here on our first live show of the new year.
Yeah, good morning, Aaron. It's an honor to be on the first show. Thank you.
Yeah, well, before we talk about what you guys are doing at the Butte Historical Society, which I think is just incredible, I can't remember. Was it 10 years ago? Was it 2013, 2014, 20? I can't remember when it was. Probably like 2013 or 2014, so probably about 10 years ago. I'm doing my radio show from Butte. I think we were at the Butte McDonald's there on Harrison. And just like we take phone calls on the show where anybody can call in, when I take the show on the road, we have open microphones, so anybody can join us on the show. And this young man walks in and makes one of the most fascinating points that I've heard in, you know, what, 10 plus years of or 15 years of doing a radio show like this, right? And that young man was you, and you walked in and you made the point that, hey, when these environmental groups come in here and they try to shut down, whether it's a timber mill or whether they try to shut down an aluminum plant or whether they try to shut down a coal mine or a power plant, they don't just file a lawsuit to shut that operation down. They also sue to tear out all of the infrastructure so that it can never get back up and running ever again. And that was such a fascinating point you made back then.
Yeah, that's actually, I mean, that's been our main angle. I mean, me privately, with my business is just saving buildings and assets, not on that scale, but you look at it, you realize the value in a house or a small commercial building, and then you start to realize how immense the value is in, you know, coal strip units 1 and 2 or a lot of other facility. I mean, the, you know, what if the the buildings for the Anaconda smelter were still there. You know, that'd be hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in value. Or even more different kinds of facilities, like hospitals especially. You know, this proposal to tear down St. Vincent's Hospital would be an extreme mistake. I mean, they can have the new building, but, you know, put the old one to good use because it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, you know. And wealth like that is on a whole nother level that you talk about Units 1 and 2 at Colstrip, and they were built to actually from the Butte headquarters. They were built to last for much, much longer than a measly 40 years.
Yeah, and it was such a great... So what were you doing at the time that led you to come up with that thought or to make that point? Because it was such a great point and something that I like to remind people about from time to time, because when people... And like as Cameron mentioned, you know, right now this conversation is separate from his role at the Butte Historical Society. We'll get to that here in a second. But I just... Some of our listeners may remember that that conversation from back then as well.
Yeah, I mean... Like I said, it was really because I got into renovating buildings on a much smaller level and just realizing that in, you know, a smart, a well-run renovation on a well-built building, it's 10% of the cost of rebuilding that building.
Mm.
And so just the value, I guess the forgotten value in the assets that we have already. And, I mean, really, I guess if I really had to go back to what really got me into it, it was my granddad who was part of a group who was working to save St. Francis School and Missoula and other buildings earlier, part of the Roundup School and Roundup decades earlier. And, I mean, I remember him showing me those places for the first time and thinking, well, they're just too strong. They're too strong to tear down, and so they really don't have to worry about anyone ever tearing these places down because they're just, you know, they're too good of a building, and you know, and come to find out that buildings like that get torn down all the time. Buildings worth tens of millions of dollars get torn down all the time, and in places that are not wealthy places.
And when it comes to our natural resource industries or timber jobs, the reason they want to tear out that infrastructure is because then they do make it more expensive if you ever want to get that operation up and running once again. Yeah, it was such a great point. Well, that being said, some of you have probably heard me reference that conversation with Cameron from time to time as we talk about the news stories of the day. But this was interesting. So I was talking about how, you know, you've got these wholesome books that are sent to kids all across Montana through the Dolly Parton program that's supported by First Lady Susan G. Gianforte. And then contrast that with the Montana Federation of Public Employees pushing all this woke, kind of radical, anti-American type of agenda with the books they promote and the teachers' conference they hosted. And you called in and you said, hey, it's not just the books that they're putting on the shelves, it's the books they're taking off of the shelves. So if I remember right, you were telling me that one thing the Butte Historical Society is doing now is as some of these libraries are putting some stuff on the shelves that kind of raise eyebrows of parents and others, but it's not just what they're putting on there. They're taking some of the old classics off of the bookshelves and just throwing these books away. So you guys are working to save these classic books, right?
Yes, and this is a much more widespread problem than I think most people realize. It's actually, I would say, all over the country from my experience, but it's been much worse. It's definitely not, it's many thousands of books in just Butte alone at the various libraries, between the school libraries and the public libraries, that are being discarded. And sometimes they'll donate them to bookstores and the like, but other times, there's been times where we found dumpsters just brimful of antique books, you know, printed in the 1880s, 1890s. Turn of the century, and it's just, and you go into a lot of these libraries now, and a large 30%, 40% of the shelves are empty. It's not like they don't have room for them, and it's also not like the books don't have value. They're, if you actually look up the resale value of a lot of these books, they're quite valuable, and so it points towards more of an ideological will to destroy them, but. Yeah, so that was really woke me up. I mean, we found books dating back to the 1820s, first edition copies being thrown away, And they were claiming that they were in poor condition when most of them actually were in good condition for their age. And so we just basically since then just and our I purchased the old St. James Hospital in Butte a few years ago, so I've got plenty of space now. So I figure, well, you know, we really don't have any excuse for any of these books getting thrown away. If people catch it and they don't have space at their house, or you know, a lot of people don't have the room to save hundreds of thousands of books. But if you find a situation like that, if you call us, we can probably work something out to save them.
Wow, very interesting. So, yeah, and if you're finding this in Butte with the libraries in Butte, where, you know, books from the 1820s, the 1880s are just, you know, being thrown away for whatever reason. But you're saying, no, we're going to hold on to these. I'll keep them. What did you say? You're keeping them at the old St. James Hospital. You've got that building now, so you're keeping and storing them there. Man, it might be pretty interesting to just walk through one day and look at the various books that you've been able to hold on to. Cameron Moylan, hold that thought. We got to take a quick break here on Montana Talks, and more to follow here with Cameron Moylan, who is the vice president of the Butte Historical Society.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, this is very interesting. You know what I think could be very interesting over the next few days or weeks is, as people are listening to this conversation with Cameron Moylan from the Butte Historical Society here in Montana, if they went to their own local library in their town all across the state and said, hey, are you guys throwing books away? I mean, again, for whatever the reasons may be, we don't have the space, or maybe there is an ideological reason, or maybe they're just like, well, we didn't see these of use anymore. We didn't see these of value anymore. It'd be interesting if people go to their local library and say, hey, are you throwing books away? And could we look through some of these before you throw them away? It would just be interesting to see what people might find out or might come across. Cameron Moylan, you were telling me you've actually come across some pretty interesting books that you've seen thrown away that you're now trying to hold on to.
Yes, we saved probably around 2,000 copies at this point, and most of them are Victorian-era books. And some of them are pre-Civil War, even. There was one copy that was Boots and Earth, first edition copy of Boots and Saddles, which was printed by it was by Libby Custer. So it was General Custer's pension money that actually paid to print that book. And it's just you know, it's just the story of the book itself is very interesting. There's other ones you can tell were written around, and you know, they must have been, you just think where these things have been if they're 150, 160 years old sometimes. But you know, there's plenty of second edition, third edition copies that are valuable as well. There's a lot of niche groups that are, you know, looking for books like, there's a big demand for vintage Catholic books. And that's one that I wish I would have realized sooner, because some of them being thrown away were. And some libraries, I should clarify, are a lot better than others about either donating them or giving people a chance. The Butte Public Library does give people a chance to look through them, usually in their bargain basement room. So that's the opportunity. A lot of libraries will set them out first, and so that's the opportunity to save a lot of them. And a lot of people, you know, they'll grab one or two, but it really doesn't make sense to save a whole pickup truck load in a lot of cases.
Yeah, so they are. That's great. They are providing that opportunity. Maybe it's just an opportunity people just didn't think of or didn't take advantage of before, especially now when the ability, some people make a lot of money reselling books online. So it may just be the case that, hey, your local library is getting rid of some of these books anyway. You can go in, grab them and post them on Amazon or whatever, and maybe somebody buys them, and hey, maybe you get some extra cash in your pocket, or maybe you find one of those hidden gems. And so, especially if you're in Butte, I would think too, because you think about it, that Butte is you know, known as the richest hill on earth, right? I mean, you look at, and it was one of the most, you know, one of the most, I guess, that there was so much wealth in Butte, America back in the day that you would definitely have the ability to come across some hidden gems of some stuff that's been, you know, sitting around in the library there, I'd imagine.
Yes, and I mean, a lot of these books were donated by the Copper Kings themselves. You know, other books that, like I say, have a very interesting story in and of themselves. But actually, when you're reading these books, you realize, too, how sophisticated society was a century and a half ago compared to now. I mean, sure, we've got more sophisticated technology now, but the average I would consider myself to be fairly well-read, and you haven't used a dictionary on just about every other page of a lot of the older books. But they're very well written, and the idea that these books that are a take on history can somehow be more accurate than the books written by the people who are there is just such a fallacy. It's hard to imagine the arrogance of there's so many people who say, oh, well, we would rather read a modern day version of what people think happened, and it can't possibly be accurate if, you know, the author wasn't actually there to witness the events they're writing about.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you say. When you go back and read what was written back then, and even though our country has advanced significantly when it comes to technology, somehow it seems like in other ways we've gone backwards, right, in some other ways. Let's see, about a minute and a half to go here. What drew you personally to Butte's history, and what keeps you passionate about Butte's history in particular?
Well, I was always fascinated by it. I mean, we used to stop there for lunch with my grandparents when I was real young, and it just was intriguing even then. And then when I found out that the city, you know, about 10, 15 years ago, fairly regularly would sell buildings and houses for $500, I thought, well, you know, it's just a no-brainer as far as an investment. And I guess that'd be my moral of this story, is even though we're going at this from the angle of history, keep in mind that whether you're talking books or buildings or any other kind of asset, it just financially makes sense to preserve any asset.
It's a business opportunity potential as well, yeah.
Yep.
By the way, I saw the UK Daily Mail had a piece just after Christmas. Montana mining town booms once again. They were talking about Butte in about 1923 being filmed there and more. Cameron Moylan, we got about 30 seconds to go. How can people get a hold of you if they want to support your efforts or find out more about what you're doing?
They can reach me best by phone at 498-5560 or deluxeservicesbutte@gmail.com. And I can also put them in touch with Patty Dennehy. This started out as more of a private effort, and we teamed up with the Butte Historical Society, so now all donations are tax deductible. And so I thank Patty Dennehy and the Butte Historical Society for, helping us on this.
Well, very cool. Cameron Moylan, thanks for joining us on the show. Always great to chat with you. Thanks so much for your time this morning, and Happy New Year.